Welcome to Talent Hub Talk. I'm Ben Duncombe, and on this podcast, I will be interviewing prominent and inspirational figures from both the local ANZ and global Salesforce Ohana. In today's episode, I'm joined by Pei Mun Lim. Pei is an experienced Salesforce project and program manager. And I had a great time catching up with her to hear more about her career, the early days, and really what she wanted to be while studying. We then looked at some of the earlier roles she played in her career before she'd actually moved into the project and program management space, and then discussed how she found her way into project management and what the first few projects looked like. We then discussed what she found out about herself when her first project didn't go to plan, and really what that meant to her and how she kind of learned from the experience. We look at the difference between a project and program manager and why some people use these interchangeably and what the difference is between the two roles or titles. We look at the success of project delivery and whether or not it's possible to deliver 100% of projects on time and budget, as some people say they do. We discuss the challenges that are consistent when delivering Salesforce projects and whether or not they're the same as delivering Microsoft projects, which is a market that Pei knows very well too. We look at the skills and values that she looked for in team members when she's hiring. We discuss what people can do now to start building out their delivery management experience if they lack that experience and if they want to be a project or program manager in the future. And then we spend some time discussing why Pei is so passionate about helping others. She's been a real inspiration through COVID with the amount of work she's done helping others on their consulting journey, just really giving back to the ecosystem, Salesforce and non-Salesforce. And yeah, it's really interesting to hear why Pei has done that and the great work that she's been doing. So I really hope you enjoy this episode. It's a really interesting one, and Pei's definitely someone you should be following on LinkedIn. She adds a lot of value there. So please check her out there. And if you do like the episode, please do subscribe for future episodes that are coming through. So Pei, thank you so much. I know it's 5 a.m. in London, and you've made yourself available to speak to me all the way here in Australia. So thank you very much, and I'm excited to be joined by you.
You're very welcome. Very well worth. I have been following your podcast, so it's worth getting up for.
Thank you very much. For you, I hope you enjoy it as much as I'm sure I will. So we've got a lot to run through, and I've obviously been alerted to you by the content that you put out online on LinkedIn and other platforms and the amount that you've been giving back to the community. And I guess sharing your story and experience to help others on their journey. So what I'd like to start with before we go through all of that is life before Salesforce, life before being a project manager. Let's look at what you really wanted to be when you were growing up.
Oh, that's a story in itself. When I was a lot younger, maybe about 10, I found a very small book on the Nostradamus and his predictions for the future. And I read through it and I thought, oh my God, he's predicted the end of the world in so many years. What am I going to do about that? So being a nerd and Star Trek fan, I decided I was going to be on a Starship Enterprise when the time comes. And in order to get on the ship, I needed to be one of those building it, I suppose. So I asked my dad if I could join the aeronautical engineering degree. And he said, well, problem is Malaysia is highly unlikely to have a space program. So you come back and not have a job. So I said, all right. How about if I programmed the robots on that ship? That's how I got into computer science, really. It's not because of a fantastic interest in computers. It was because I wanted to be on a spaceship.
Yeah.
And I found out that I was really bad at programming. And all the assignments that we got, I would do far too many lines of code and it would be hugely inefficient to run. And that gave me my start. And I kind of stayed in the industry doing almost everything. Came back and started training Microsoft Office. So I was in a Microsoft partner, working with a partner. And my manager said, here, here's an exam voucher for Windows NT 3.5. Can't remember now. It's a long time ago. Would you do the exam? And I said, oh, okay, it's free. So I did the exam, I failed, and I thought, I don't fail at anything. So I studied and I passed that. I thought, ooh, I like passing exams. So I did that. I did MS Mail at the time, Microsoft Exchange, and then I got onto the Microsoft certification path, became a systems engineer, network engineer, a DBA. I did SQL, and then I got a job with Remedy, which did help desk systems. And then came back to Microsoft World and started Microsoft CRM 2006. And that's where I kind of stayed and did a lot of the roles within implementing CRM projects, functional consulting, to training, to testing, to project management, did all of those roles. I then became a contractor when I had my twins, which allowed me to work intensively for a few months and then have a few months off. I had an amazing nanny, which allowed me to do that. And then I got a contract as program manager. And that was when I realized, oh, I've done almost everything, every role in the Microsoft CRM space. An ex-colleague of mine said, you should have a look at Salesforce. It's a big world out here. And I thought, oh, that's like the dark side to us. But I did. I took his advice. I checked on LinkedIn. I wrote to the recruitment on the, any of the partners and said, look, I know CRM. I don't know Salesforce, but I do know CRM. Would you take a chance on me and take me on as a project manager? And Make Positive did. And that's in 2014, I moved over and I stayed, and then I joined Capgemini, and now I'm running my own business, looking to plug the gap of talent around implementing projects. So I think Trailhead is amazing in making the platform and the product accessible and available to anyone. It's a game changer, equalizer. And what I love about it is that you don't have to be a nerd or a techie to pick up this product, because it's business. It's solving real world business problems, and they've done an amazing job. Where the gap is that I have seen is around implementing it. You know what the product can do, but when and how do you apply it in a right way?
Interestingly, you've progressed, right? So your career has been about progression and progression between roles, progression ultimately to project management, program management. Was that like by strategy? Did you want to become a project manager? Was that something that you'd identified as a role that you would be good at? Or did it just kind of progress in a direction that you just ran with?
At one point in my career, I faced the choice of either extending my expertise in functional consulting and being a solutions engineer, or in project management. So more specialized, more generalized was the choices that was in front of me. And they're both equally feasible. What I did realize was that I was far better at managing people than a lot of the other project managers. And also that was something that I felt could be transferable anywhere else if I chose to move to Oracle or SAP. And so I decided to go down that path.
Sure. Okay. And does your computer science background help in your role?
Very much so. That allows me to understand how components stack together, how software is developed. It fits quite nicely because I can understand how Salesforce is built, and I may not understand the detailed parts of the technology. I can speak the lingo, and I can understand when someone explains to me integration is also my other favorite thing, how things integrate and why they integrate. You've got APIs and all that sort of thing. So it was really, really helpful.
Sure. And then also, this is a really obvious one, but your functional consulting background in CRM must also lead really nicely into being a project manager if you have the project management skills, like the ability to lead and manage people. Do you think that is just a really natural progression for a functional consultant?
If that's what they like, because the role of a project manager is to take away a lot of the noise and a lot of distractions so that the team can work and focus on what they're good at. And if that's where you see your talent lies and that's what you really like, then it is a natural progression for the next step in your career.
Sure. So it doesn't always go to plan, right? A project doesn't always go to plan, as far as I'm aware, as far as I hear. So what did you learn about yourself when your first project didn't go according to plan as a project manager?
Oh, a lot. I actually wrote about this on my post the other day. I knew how to implement the software. I didn't know how to implement the project. I knew the principles of it, how to plan and everything. But the core principles of project management is managing expectations. And that was something I failed to do. And my very first project went sideways. because of that, and also because at that time, 2005-2006, it was Microsoft CRM 3.0, which was very young, very, very young. And it had a lot of limitations in terms of its product. And plus, my team was young, and I was young in that role. And so many reasons why it didn't go right. Luckily, I had an amazing leadership team. My director stepped in and my manager stepped in. They all helped me out and said, let's make this right and let's take this as a learning. And that was amazing. And from then on, I realized that the key thing is to manage expectations and keep your eye on the ball. And if something's not going quite right, raise it as a risk, make sure it's escalated correctly, addressed correctly and early on. So the later you leave things, the worse things can get, the more it's going to cost, the more damage it's going to inflict. So manage expectations early on and eye on the ball. That's the biggest.
And that's true in everyday life as well, right? Not just for project management, but like if you manage things and flag issues early, like they're probably not going to get as bad as they could if you don't. But it's easier said than done, especially if you've never done that before and it's your first project. Is that just something that most project managers learn the tough way by not doing that? Like, or do you, is that something that now people are better equipped to do because of people like yourself speaking about it?
You always learn better when you who falls down and gets hurt. And I tell my team and that character building projects are there to teach you lessons, how to be better in the future. And so while listening to those who have gone through the path and understanding, okay, I've got to manage expectations, but it doesn't hit home until you are running a project and something's going wrong. Let's say your team hasn't been resourced correctly and you've been given someone really junior and you now need to make the project work and you just can't with somebody maybe too new. So it might be the company's fault. We've made big promises and we just can't deliver. So it's an internal conversation to how that's going to be managed, because obviously that's going to impact perception from the client side to say, right, got someone junior because we weren't able to get someone more senior. So it's going to hit your project timeline. Maybe the cost is absorbed internally because, again, it's our fault. But giving that message, it's not easy for any project manager to do if they are young and they're junior and they're new. But it's something that comes with time to say, hey, look, we've got an issue, is we're accountable / responsible for it, and this is how we intend to resolve it, and this is the impact it's going to take. So sometimes not easy to have that sort of conversation when you're just starting out.
I guess it doesn't get easy, but it gets easier. But do you still get nervous ahead of a discussion like that with a stakeholder, like a senior stakeholder, where you're about to tell them that the project isn't going to be delivered on the date that you'd agreed to? Is that still a nerve-wracking conversation for you today?
So for sure, it kind of is sometimes, but I make things a lot easier. I'm able to make sure that the relationship is in a good place where I can have that conversation. So I now know we need to get started right and create a rapport, and I touch base with the client very frequently over and above our regular meetings. I will have a really early weekly call, perhaps just say, how are you feeling? How do you see this going? Is there anything I can do to make things better for you moving forward? Next week, for example, we've got something tricky coming up. Do you have something that you're concerned with? Is there anything I can do to help you make that easier? So by having those weekly conversations, we become joint partners in trying to make this work. So there's no more it's us and them or you and I. It's all of us as a team. And that makes those conversations so much easier, because then it's not about whose fault was it that you now have a junior resource that's unable to complete this work. It's okay, we needed this done at this time. I recognize all your senior guys are on other projects. What can we do to get things done in the timeline that we need to? So it becomes a problem solving conversation between two people.
Sure. Yeah, I guess that's a great way of looking at it, right? And if you build that trust to that point, it must be easier. So you mentioned you were a project and you were also a program manager at one point on your Microsoft journey. We see those titles, obviously, like we see project manager, senior project manager, delivery manager, head of delivery, program manager, senior program manager. I guess the two common ones are project and program manager. At what point does a project manager become a program manager?
So this was with a client, and program manager was just, I started out on that contract as a project manager, and it was one of several projects that was going live for the local council. I was doing the contact center revamp, rebuild the contact center application, and there were several work streams in place, all integrating with Microsoft CRM. And a backend system with housing, with the penalty notices, the library, all the different social services, the school, they were all integrated with the contact center because that was the point where the council would be connecting with its residents. So my project was just the contact center rollout, and it was one of, I think, 23 projects. And it was the first to go live. When it went live, my contract was about to end. I was requested to see if I wanted to take on a program manager role and manage the other streams and project managers and the little teams of BAs and testers. And so that's just what it is. Program manager is somebody who manages all the other teams and projects and coordinate it just at a higher level.
So a program manager wouldn't necessarily get into the detail of each project, but they would be the escalation point for any project manager on those programs. So they become Correct. Kind of like the stakeholder for the project manager from a delivery perspective.
Correct.
So, because it's interesting, right? So, because I think people like, some people that are program managers don't like to take a project manager role because they see it as a step backwards. But some people use the title kind of interchangeably because when it suits them, I guess when they're going for a project manager role, they'll say that they're a project manager role when it might have been more program management. So I think sometimes people can chop and change the role to try and make it suit the role that they're going for.
I would say that's probably right. But it's not the same thing.
Sure.
The skills are somewhat similar, but it's at a much, much higher level in that you are managing senior stakeholders and coordinating the project managers in the different work streams to make sure that they're aligned and they don't step on each other. And when something happens on one project, it knocks on the other project because what we were doing had a lot of integration work and they all had to be coordinated correctly and properly. So it's at a much higher level. And no, I don't get to talk to the developers, for example, on how to resolve specific issues, but then you're coordinating with the project managers to make sure that it's an orchestration.
Sure.
In the way that I see it. Yeah.
So would you now go between the two roles, or do you see yourself as one or the other?
I like project management. I like working my team. I like CRM. So given the choice, I would stay where I am, project management, only because it's so much more fun to see something come alive. Go lives are just the best time. So you have this team you've worked with for however many months. You've got the clients on your side. And if you do things right, it's loads of fun as well. And it's like, you know, I don't drive cars, but if I did and it was like racing, it'd be like F1 racing. It's lots of adrenaline. And the deployment go live is just, again, when done right, it's very buzzy. And I don't get quite the same thing at program management level. So if I were to continue my career, I'd probably just stay here because it's just too much fun.
Sure. So if someone says, like, if someone that has delivered multiple projects, and I'm not talking like one or two, I'm talking like a big number, and they say, I always deliver my projects on time and budget, all the time. Are they lying?
It depends on whether there's a qualifier that they don't speak about. I would say that there's this thing called the project manager's iron triangle, which is if you move something, everything else kind of moves in accordance if you want to keep the quality the same. So if you add scope, you either have to add more people or more time. You can't force people to work harder, longer hours, not moving the budget or the timeline and expect to get the same quality. That's the law. I adhere to that. And if the client wants to add scope, I'd say, well, that's perfectly fine. But what do you want to de-scope?
Yeah.
Or do you want to add more resources, more timeline, and spend more? So these are just the choices that you can play with. And if the client says, well, no, I don't want to pay more, well, something's got to give.
Sure.
So when you have that sort of conversation, then the on time and on budget becomes slightly spurious, because the client can chop and change anyway and anyhow they like, and suddenly the budget's changed, and the scope's changed, the timeline's changed. So if I'm interviewing project managers and we have that conversation, I don't ask that question because it doesn't mean very much. I'll ask a question around, what do you do and how do you deal with a client who wants to add scope but not impact timeline and budget? How do you manage that? And I will have a conversation and I'll find out how they've done it in the past and whether it's the right way or not the right way.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think because that's always a that's like a qualifying question I've heard recruiters ask when they recruit project managers, and like that's a typical question, like tell me when you last delivered a project on time and on budget, right? But yeah, it's so true, right? Something has to give if there's a change in requirements and change in scope, like, and it's just about managing that conversation effectively, right?
Yeah.
So you have delivered projects now, Salesforce and Microsoft. Do you see that the challenges and the biggest complexities with any project are typically the same? And is that kind of system or technology agnostic, or do you find that there are different challenges now that you're delivering more Salesforce projects than the ones that you found in the Microsoft world?
The challenges are varied. And that's why I really like it. It's always different projects, like a different job, different people, different problems, different technology, different things you're trying to solve, and just such a variety. And broadly, when you're implementing change, it's either people, process, or technology, the three large categories that you're trying to kind of move all at the same time. And at its core, a CRM is a CRM, regardless of what platform and product you use. It's about implementing business change, change in behavior to achieve a business objective. And there is no, I can't say, when I moved to Salesforce, the technology issue is no longer there, and not to say Salesforce is better than Microsoft or not. But no, I can't see a pattern apart from it's almost always a people thing, where you have a client who thinks CRM will fix their problem, but they have more fundamental issues than that. So it's an example, might be a new sales director who really, really likes Salesforce, used it in the past, wants to implement it here, but there's no real business case. It might be they already have a fully functioning CRM that's fit for purpose, but he's just come in and said, this is the best, and I want everyone to change, and not listening and not making a sound business case for it. And we'll go in, we'll put it in, and then it gets pulled out 6 months later because he's not got proper buy-in and it's not been implemented in a way that solves real business need for them. So a lot of the times it's on the people side that needs addressing.
So what are your key requirements up front before kicking off a project? And like, if you could create the perfect environment to deliver a project into, like, what are you looking for? Is it like executive buy-in, and not just they've signed it off, but they actually want this project to be a success and they're motivated to make sure that the project is that like the key thing that you need? Or
that they've done their due diligence and they have a solid business case. They know their why. Why are they putting it in? What problem are they trying to solve? And is it something that they've looked into carefully and they've cast a critical eye over it? And if it all comes out that yes, a CRM and specifically Salesforce is the platform to go for, and they've done their due diligence around their vendor selection process, the requirements, strong sponsors, then I can see all the markers for success, and then it becomes a great partnership.
Sure. So then if we look at the team that you then have to deliver the project, so the developers, the functional consultants that are beneath you, more than anything else, what do you value in your team? Like, what does a project manager look for from their team? And not just being like great developers or functional consultants, but like from a value set.
So I think about this quite deeply because I form lots and lots of teams. And in some companies like CAP, you don't know who you're getting until the day of the internal kickoff. You don't know their competence level. You don't know who they are. You may not have worked with them before. They may not be from the Salesforce delivery unit because they might draw competence from the other delivery unit. So what I look for are two fairly broad categories, but they are quite complete in the way that I see. One is conscientiousness, and that defines competence as well as deep care in the quality of your work. That tells me that you're not somebody who takes shortcuts, that you think the big picture and you do things properly. And that covers what I feel are the hard skills, the delivery hard skills. The softer side of things is the emotional intelligence. And that's broken up into the four subcategories, which is self-management. Do you get upset in front of the client when you get a constructive feedback? Do you take things personally? Are you able to grow, to know where your limitations are and say, that's an area that I want to get better in? Self-awareness in terms of how things affect you, about yourself in general. Then you have the social awareness, which is empathy, to understand and to be able to read the person that you're speaking to. So this is a big thing, especially when you're running requirements gathering. So I've been a functional consultant and lots of requirements workshop is to understand how your workshop attendees are feeling when they're coming in. Are they in a good place to help you get the requirements you need? A lot of people see new system as a change in the organization, which may potentially lead to a change in their job role. So there might be an element of insecurity and worry and concern. And if you have empathy and you're good at detecting just social cues, then you pick up on things like this and then you're a bit more gentler in the way you approach. You might ask slightly different questions and find a way to slightly de-escalate before things get heightened, for example. And it can get quite emotional. And I've been in situations where the workshop attendees start to have an internal argument about why something's necessary. And it's just having the social empathy to understand and read the room. So that's the third category. And the fourth category is creating social relationships. So the two broad categories are conscientiousness and emotional intelligence is what I look for in my team. And if you have that, the makeup can be anything. So when I say the makeup, personality, so you can be outgoing, you can be very quiet, but very diligent, and you can be playful, and you can be very serious. But the two core characters is what I look for, and I'm open to anything else.
And this is an interesting one, because what if they don't have them, right? And because basically you're in a consulting partner, quite often you inherit the team, right? So it's not a team you've decided on. And day one, the project kickoff, like you said, you might not have met them before. And if someone doesn't have the emotional intelligence or any of the other traits that you're looking for, do you try and coach that? And is that your job to coach that in them? Or is your job to deliver that project? Therefore, you don't have time to be, you know, handholding someone that doesn't have the skills that are going to help you deliver the outcome?
So from my point of view, the project manager is responsible for the successful delivery of the project. And you can't do it if your team isn't pulling its weight. So yes, I do see my job as coaching, making sure that they're running the workshops correctly, they're handling situations correctly, insofar as they're able to, and sometimes for whatever reasons, they're unable to. So a team member who's going through a divorce, for example, may let that spill over to the work life, or one of my developers going through a miscarriage and not sharing that information and having that quality impacted because of personal circumstance, then I can't fix those, but I can find a way to make their world easier in some ways if I'm aware of that. And that goes towards making sure that I create a very, very safe space within my team to talk about anything and everything so that I can find a way to help them help me get the project across the line, is how I put it.
Yeah, and that, I guess that's why empathy is also not just important in the team members, but it's kind of comes from the top, right? If you don't have that, then how can you expect your team to? So I guess that kind of absolutely makes sense. But and with the right project manager, people will have that trust to be more open. Whereas, you know, if someone doesn't have that level of empathy, then of course no one's going to come into the office and explain that, you know, they've got issues going on at home because they know the reception they're going to get to that.
Correct.
So what would you say are some of the big, you mentioned before with delivering Salesforce projects, there's some gaps that you find in terms of the implementation or the consulting experience. And like, what are those gaps and why do you think they exist?
For Salesforce specifically, it's been brought about by Trailhead, which I think is amazing. As I mentioned earlier, it's a great equalizer to see how someone can move into this area just by the force of their interest and learn a product in such a fun, engaging way. It means that anyone can learn about Salesforce. Where the gap is that I can see is in the implementation of it. Just because you can create these sort of fields doesn't mean you should. Just because you can do this particular automation doesn't mean you should. It doesn't mean you should do it in that way, because you're going to create an issue later on when you try to do further kind of automations. So it's about understanding what problem is this going to solve in all around understanding requirements and how it's going to be implemented in the best way. That's what's missing that I can see.
And you have been running consulting, like kind of boot camps and masterclasses, and you're very active on LinkedIn, which is, you may be active on other platforms, but I see LinkedIn because where I am. But why is that so important to you? Like, why are you trying to help others on their journey? Like, where did that kind of come from in you?
So there's a couple of threads in that. One is how that came about. In after CAP, I took a year out to write the content specifically because I felt there was such a big gap in the implementation process. And I could see that not just at where I was at, but with the other partners as well, that they were hiring people who had certifications but wasn't able to deliver projects, and then you spend more time or money trying to fix the issues with assistance from your more senior consultants. So I took a lot of time out to build content. And I was working as a project manager for Fontiva at the time. And then I started seeing a lot of posts on LinkedIn from those who were hit by redundancies and being furloughed. And obviously, because of my volunteer work, I can hear so many stories of how people are struggling. And I had all this material that I'd already written. And so it was a question of why not? I can. And the first time I ran it was in June. I had no preconceptions. I said, I've got all this material. Who just wants to learn something about delivering projects? And I will just go through everything I've got. You tell me what you like and what to think. So I had my very first group in June. We ran it every day from 5 to 6:30. Over a course of 8 weeks, I think, every day. And they found a lot of value. And I thought, oh, well, I could do this again. And I did it again. And I've done 3 now. And I'm just about to start my 4th one on the 1st of December. And it was a case of I can help. I had the time. I'm really lucky to have an amazing husband and my children very tolerant of me doing this last thing, because they know I train the Samaritans as well, and all non-moms doing training again. So they're very supportive and they're okay with me starting dinner slightly late while I do this. And it's really quite cool to know that I'm able to just maybe help make a difference. Maybe I can't get them a job, but giving them skills, it didn't cost me anything to run this. So why not if I can?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, it's an amazing thing you're doing. And I'm sure even if someone doesn't get a job immediately off the back of it, like, they're picking up skills that they'll carry through for the rest of their career. So sometimes it's hard to see the immediate payoff, but just being able to help someone is enough. And yeah, I'm sure that will come through further down the line, if not immediately. So for anyone that's looking for a career as a project manager, it can be hard to get your first kind of project manager role if you've never delivered a project before. Like, you know, what comes first, the chicken or the egg? So what's your advice to someone that wants to be a project manager but hasn't delivered a project before?
If you're in a Salesforce ecosystem, then I'd say start by getting your hands dirty and becoming a Salesforce admin, because that's the only way that you'll become a good one, is to understand what it means to be in the trenches, understand what it means to when you get stuck and you've got this function that you're trying to resolve but you can't, and just understanding what it means. So, for example, if you go through Prince training, the idea is that if you're a project manager, you can project manage the building of your extension or the highway or any projects. But theoretically, that might be true, because what you're managing is resources, and you could be a project admin by saying, these are the tasks that need to be done. How far are you along? Are we on track? Are we not on track? And that's the very bare minimum of responsibility of a project admin. But project manager galvanizes, motivates the team to solve the problem for the customer and to get it over the line. And to be an effective one, you need to know how to solve problems using the platform, and to be able to identify with your team member and to connect with them, so that they are able to feel safe with you and feel that as a team we can cross any barriers. And so that's where I see the value add of a very good project manager is. The first step, if that's what you want to be, is to begin at the beginning, which is get yourself a cert, get your hands dirty, volunteer for charity. There's so many charities out there who are on the .org platform who could use a helping hand. Just get to know the product and then work your way up from there. If you've done your PMP and Prince 2 and you want to get started as a project manager, it's going to be really hard. I've had a few of those, and they're unable to connect with their team. They're not quite sure if what the team is telling them is what the state of play is, and they're very much less effective in their role. And I would hesitate to recruit someone into that role without prior Salesforce experience, unless they've had other CRM experience.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it is interesting because, you know, people have different opinions on that. Like, oh, it's just a project. Like, some people that are trying to come into the ecosystem that haven't delivered Salesforce would be like, oh, you know, it can't be any different from delivering anything else. But you've obviously done it. Like, it's good to note that, because, you know, obviously you've delivered things in and outside of Salesforce, and the knowledge that you have in Salesforce makes your life so much easier. So two more questions. What's the future for your role now? Like, because you've got your own small consulting business, like, do you prefer now to be like an independent? What's your plan, short to medium term?
So interestingly, what I've been doing has attracted some attention from some partners who've approached me to do internal training. And so there's some leg there. And I really enjoy it. I really like the idea of making people much better at implementation. So as an example, I had a friend of mine who said, oh, we've got Salesforce and it's horrible. It's clunky. It's this, it's that. And my response is, it's not Salesforce. It's your implementation. Because I've seen CRM being used in non-real traditional CRM implementation that I've done, and it's so sexy. It's when implemented right, it can be really, really good and add a huge amount of value. So that's where I found my passion, in terms of helping people get better at doing this. And if I can carry on and just help partners do it better and grow their own internal talent, because Salesforce, I think, it's the right rising star to hitch your wagon on. Growing your talent newly from graduates and building core team of really loyal people who would do the hours, cross the mile for you. In one of my early projects, I didn't estimate enough time for testing, but we needed to test. And my director just said, tell me what you need. And all I said, I just announced to the company to say, who wants to help me do some testing for some free pizza? And I got a lot of people helping me out in their own time to test the system. And that's where I really enjoy just getting people to love being in a great team, to love fixing business problems with a product that's frankly pretty amazing. So I'd like to carry on doing this. If I can, that'd be great.
Yeah, nice. And then the final one is, as I said, I found you online. And if other people listening or watching this want to see what you're all about, read your posts and maybe come on one of the courses at one point in the future, where is the best place? Where should people be looking and contacting you?
At the moment, I live in LinkedIn. I know I should try the other social media, but I'm not quite that savvy yet. So LinkedIn is where you'll find me.
Sure. Well, look, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed the chat, and I think there's lots of value in there for anyone in the ecosystem, but whether they're going down the project management route or into consulting, there's lots of info there. So thank you very much, and good luck with the future of your business and your plans.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Talent Hub Talk. If you're enjoying the podcast, we'd love it if you could subscribe and also leave a short review. We're keen for this podcast to reach as many people in the Salesforce ecosystem as possible, and your reviews will help us do that.